Hello, everybody, and welcome to Focus Fire, episode number 25. I'm Alan, and once again, I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jeff Dirty Pool.
What up, hoes?
Focus Fire is a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast aimed at providing you focus and practical advice that you can actually use to improve your games. And once again, as always, we're brought to you by the TFG Radio Network and also Hammerhead Games. Check them out at hammerheadgames.net and $7 for all shipping U.S. orders, free shipping at $99 and above, and use promo code SHARKS for everyday 10% off discount. And we today are lucky to be joined by two of our guests. Once again, back thirsty for more blood is Richard Pretty, the prettiest of dicks. Say hi, Richard.
I feel like I'm a usual on this podcast now.
I know, really. Two in a row. And we have a very, very special guest, Ray from Veteran Gamer Realisted Podcast. Say hi, Ray.
What up? I'm glad I'm special to you, at least.
Yeah, you're always special.
Man, speak for yourself, Alan. Speak for yourself.
And not necessarily in a good special kind of way. Okay, tonight we're going to be discussing VGR's first invitational RTT. It's not because we wanted it to be an invitational, because it had to be. And we're going to go over lists, some of our games played, and finally going to fish up our thoughts on 9th edition and changing our lists as we get more games in, we get more practice with our lists and getting more and more familiar with 9th edition.
Hey,
go ahead.
I'm going to jump in and say it wasn't invitational because some of my friends suck. So,
well, you know, sometimes you need to pad out the roster with a few punching bags, you know, to make everybody else feel good.
That's why Phil was there.
And we live California, and this is basically in Southern California, and people in the rest of the country might not know, California's been locked down for about, I guess, 5 months now, and all the game stores have been basically closed. We can't really get any games, any tournaments, or anything like that, and we're still going to be iffy whether or not we're going to get off SoCal Open at the end of October. And then you, Ray, you have a Slaughterfest coming up in November.
How's that looking? That's actually looking promising, as right now tickets, the wait list is back open. So if you want to go to slaughterfest.com, you could go ahead and get on the wait list, as we're already sold out currently.
Okay, because I am on the wait list just waiting eagerly, but hopefully we'll be able to get a couple GTs off. So right now we're getting in RTTs, and because we can't go to a real game store or any place like that, it was kind of like a speakeasy now. We have to have like a special knock on the door and be let in and make sure the cops don't come. And Ray, go ahead and tell us about how you started with the idea of getting a invitational and what you went through to get it going.
Well, yeah, it's pretty easy. I was at work driving a truck, and I was like, man, I really want to play 40K with good people. So I was like, all right, I can do it at my house. And I'm single, so I don't got to ask nobody. So I was like, all right, let's just hit it up. And then so I messaged Dick, and I was like, hey, because, you know, he's on rec with you guys, and I know you guys had a practice. And I was like, okay, well, at least they'll be willing to come. You just kind of have to know good people. I mean, usually people that are really good are competitive anyways, and they have that itch to itch, and that's what I did. I mean, I'm with friends on Facebook with a lot of, I know people on Facebook. I'm not friends with everybody, but like I send messages.
He knows people.
I send messages to everybody through Facebook, and that's pretty much how I got everybody to come. People said no, and some people, I had to have a requirement to have masks. So, you know, you kind of have to do what the crowd needs. I mean, I hate masks, but, you know, it got people to come. So you go ahead and take the precautions that you need to make everybody kind of happy. The one advice I would give is that pick a day that you want to do it. That's okay for you. Because, I mean, if you're doing it at your house, it has to be good for you. Like, that's the most important person. So just pick that day. And if people can't make it, they just can't make it. Like, and so you can just move on. And that's what my idea is. Like, I just kept messaging people that were like one GTs placed high or high in the rankings of ITC to come play so we could get some good practice. Because I don't know about you guys, the first round of the RTT was like, I don't know, maybe my 7th or 10th game. I don't know. and it definitely showed when I was playing.
Yeah, it's been pretty slim pickings for I think everybody these days, with especially in Southern California as far as getting your games in.
Yeah, but on your question of like getting it all started, you know, you have to have the will to do it, and it's a lot of work because you have to be okay with having all these people over. You also, once you see that you have the interest, then you got to move on to the terrain. Luckily, like you said, Alan, I am part of Slaughterfest, so I have easy access to terrain. I know that could be pretty hard from people, and I suggest like maybe ask the other players to bring terrain with you, because I know Jeff, you offered, but I mean, I was good. Like I said, I run a GT, so I have plenty of terrain. The tables is the next thing, and then logistics of like where you're going to put all the tables. So those are things to think about.
Yeah, you don't really need to be too fancy if you want to do like a home RTT. If you have to, you know, you can just get some 4x6. Actually, you need less than that nowadays, but 4x6 plywood boards, just put them on some sawhorses if you had to, and just get everything going.
Yeah, the easiest table is a plyboard that's of the appropriate size, and then on top of a folding table, and just tell people don't be lazy fat fucks and lean on tables.
Yeah. So, and you were able to get streaming going too from the Dice Hammer guys, which was nice.
Yeah. So, that was a bonus. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say, did you seek that out, or was it something that just kind of hit you up to stream?
Well, I mean, first Dick said that, you guys were interested, and I was like, yeah, sure, that's no problem. And then I never heard anything about it, and then Dick hit me up again and was like, yeah, I got some friends that want to stream. I was like, I don't give a shit. I got internet, sure. That's how all that came about. Like, it just, like, everything kind of just falls in, like, place after you start, like, you know, getting things rolling.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is, like, look, like, this is going to be something that I think a lot of people are going to start doing over the next 6 months. Like, when the COVID restrictions start, at least in California, when they start loosening in 2021, who knows? But, like, right now it's easy just to, like, you know, especially if the weather's agreeable. It was not that hot on Sunday. I mean, it was, you know, not like this weekend's going to be like 110 or some shit. But, you know, just as long as the weather's going to be good and you have the space for it, you know, and you can kind of keep people you're not going ass to elbows inside your garage or something. And I think it's going to be fine. Right on. So Ray, did you think about at all, like trying to get a good spread of armies, or were you just like, I'm going to invite like the people I want to invite, and whatever they bring is what they bring?
Well, it's kind of hard here on the West Coast because it's kind of weird. We don't really play Space Marines, at least the like good players don't. Like, it's really weird, but like, yeah, no, I was just picking people that do good. If like I said, if they placed or won a tournament, they got an invite.
Word. Yeah. All right, man. Well, let's just talk about our games. You know, I think what we want to do in this section is we're going to have all four of us are going to kind of explain the list we brought to the Invitational. We're going to kind of talk about what the core concept of the list is, what it's kind of trying to do. I think it's important also just to, if you have secondaries you prefer to take with that list, kind of tell the audience why, and like, you know, how your army performs those. And then, you know, if you can remember, like, you know, what you how you thought it would do at the event. And then let's talk about a game. And then if you think you should change your list. And why don't we start with Richard Cozart, who won the event. Big dick.
That's a lot to remember, so you might have to, like, ask me a couple of questions midway through.
Let's do it. I know you have the brain the size of a pea. Let's get it.
Exactly.
It's not as big as your dick, right?
It's not as big as my dick, I guarantee it.
Yeah, that's why it's so small.
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't remember half the list. So why don't you explain your list, Richard, and kind of, like, what your core concept was going into, like, why you built the list the way you built it.
Sure. So I started off with an Emperor's Children patrol. So it's just a Chaos Lord bare bones with a combi bolter. Unit of 10 cultists, 2 units of 10 noise marines. Everyone has a sonic blaster except for the 2 blast masters. Then I have 2 termite assault drills that have the twin Volkrite chargers, which are really fucking good in my opinion. Then I have a Word Bearer's Patrol that has a Lord Discordant, which is my Warlord, who gets the D3 command points at the start of the game, plus a free reroll, and the Mark of Zinch, and he has a relic that's the Crown of the Blasphemer. I got a Sorcerer and Terminator armor that has the Malefic Tome. It's the extra cast and the plus one to cast. I'm sorry, extra psychic power and plus one to cast. And then 2 units of cultists, two units of Slaanesh possessed nine man that have the Icon of Excess, and then four rhinos, and that's literally the whole list.
Right on. So what is this list trying to do? Like, is it trying to like be, I mean, it seems like it has a lot of big punching units, like, you know, it's like five alpha threats, you know, two Noise Marine squads and two possessed squads and then the Disco Lord. So, you know, kind of, do you think it's like a threat overload list style, or how do you play it?
It's a little bit of a threat overload list, but to be honest, most of the units you don't have a chance at shooting at until I give you that opportunity. What I try to do is I try to take over the board as much as I possibly can, get as many points, park rhinos on top of objectives, leave the possessed in the rhinos until I know I can make a charge while disembarking from them in the same turn. And then the Noise Marines just calm down and they do what they need to do, you know, kill those big threats. So yeah, it's kind of a, there is a lot going on in that list, but at the same time, I think it's very simple. It's aerial denial. You know, I really am good at blocking out my whole deployment zone. You're not going to deep strike in within me. And, you know, rhinos are not fun to shoot at. And if you finally kill that rhino, you're probably not killing all of the possessed that are inside.
Right on. So you kind of like try and control the tempo of the game. Like you set the engagement because you have so many threats and you can kind of choose where the engagement happens. Is that right?
Correct. And then like one little trick that I've been using quite a lot, especially at the tournament, is if they do finally kill that rhino, I'll take those possessed and I'll just jump them into a fresh rhino that's nearby and then shoot that up the board. So that's another thing that they're going to have to chew through. And it just keeps my threats alive for pretty much the entire game. It's surprising how long they live. They're easily going to turns 3 and 4 before they finally get worn down.
Yeah, and so why? I mean, I think Emperor's Children kind of understands that those they turn Noise Marines up to an 11. But what's with the possessed being word bearers? Is there? I know they have that strat. So why don't you kind of explain that for the listeners?
So possessed are probably only good in two armies right now, which is going to be either Death Guard, which you have to put a lot of buffs in them to make them good, or and Word Bearers, which is a 1 CP strat to just bump their damage up to a flat 2. And I like to have, you know, small surgical units that just run up, kill something, and then, you know, that's it. I don't have to buff them. I don't have to do anything to them unless I want to. And them just being flat 2 damage, and especially with the Icon of Excess that's in my list, against any Imperium army, I'm exploding on 5s to hit. So they can generate quite a bit of attacks, even if I roll that like a 1 on the D3.
Yeah, so they seem like they're kind of, you know, this is something we talked about in our last episode, actually, is like kind of units that can operate independently. So that's awesome. And then the Disco Lord, why don't you kind of talk about that? I mean, it's a pretty durable threat. But why don't you walk the listeners how durable it can be?
It's incredibly durable, but I got to give you credit for half of this list, Jeff, as my team captain, because we came up with this list together. I mean, I was the Emperor's Children side, you were the Word Bearer's side, and I just put the two together and made the thing work. But that Lord Discordant automatically has a 4-up invul from the Crown of Blasphemer. You get a free reroll from the Warlord trait and 3 D3 command points at the start of the game. And there's a really cool strat for Word Bearers where you could just, it's only one time per character, but you can just make that save in automatic 6. So if you have an
invul, and after you've rolled it, right?
After you rolled it. So in one turn, you can use a CP reroll, a CP to just make it an auto 6, and then another free reroll from the Warlord trait. So it's Markazinch, so you give him the Weaver of Fates power. So he's walking around with a 3-up invul, and he could reroll 3 of those failed dice. And one of them you're guaranteeing. So if someone, you know, hits you with something really big, strength, you know, damage 6, I'm just going to auto-pass that. Incredibly durable, especially when he's healing himself every turn. And then it gets even worse when he gets in a melee, starts killing a vehicle, and he heals himself D3 on top of that. So it's really good.
It's definitely gross. So what about your secondaries that you like to pick with this list? I know, because I think we talked about it before, is it's kind of struggles with secondaries. So which ones did you find that it was able to perform throughout the event?
Well, what was surprising is I actually picked Domination for the first time, and against a smaller army that can't really control the whole board,
you have a ton of units that you can do that. And it's actually quite easy if you're able to control more than half of the objectives and set the end of your turn. So that's actually something I might be using more in the future now that I've tested it out. But the my go-tos pretty much every time are going to be deploy scramblers, and I like line breakers. It's an easy flat 4 points. You get it at the end of your turn. I already have termites that are going to be popping up probably in your backfield to kill stuff with noise marines. So the second the noise marines jump out, that's already two units in your back line. Usually I have a chaos lord back there. So if you kill something, I'm still getting those four points from the secondary every single turn. Those are my go-to. Anything past that, I kind of just I just look at your list and see what it's good at.
Okay. What about, you know, you were going into the thing, we kind of knew generally what people were going to be bringing. But once you saw everyone's list, what were your thoughts on how your list would match up into a lot of the kind of armies at this event?
I was quite terrified, actually, because you got like two Brandon Grant style lists. So they just ignore all AP 1 and 2, which if you look at my list, that's basically my entire army except for the two termites. So that worried me. Juniors, you know, Sanguinary Guard and fucking Assault Centurions. Just a lot of those had me really worried that I wasn't going to be able to take them on. So I'm pretty happy with my performance.
Nice. Okay. So why don't you walk us through one of your games? Like, and you know, maybe something that you learned or could pass on to the listeners would be cool too.
The game that's freshest in my memory is obviously the last one when I played against Carlos and his really good custodies. One thing I kind of realized midway through the game is I don't have to really kill anything. You know, there was a time where I had my possessed hidden in a corner behind some ruins. He has no indirect fire, and only his plane can get over there and has the mobility to shoot those possessed, which he doesn't have that much firepower out of that one plane. And I'm already standing on partial of the objective. He's got a rhino in there with some girls inside the rhino, but that's still, it's only one thing. So originally my thought was to jump out behind the ruin, attack the rhino, and then, you know, try and kill the girls inside or whatever. But then I realized I can just hold that objective by standing on the other side of this wall. He can't see me. He can't do anything about it. And I take that objective from him. I have more models than him on that. It's little things like that that I'm starting to get better at, is realizing you don't have to really focus on killing that much in this edition. I just have to score more points than you. So it makes you play a little bit different.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely am getting that as well. There's a lot of things to learn about 9th edition, and now every time you kill something, it has to have a purpose for the mission. Like I find it's like you're either taking someone off an objective to deny them points or to get yourself points, or, you know, prevent them from doing a secondary mission or something like that. You're never just like, well, I need to kill more. I need to kill something just to kill something. That's not 9th edition. So.
Correct. Yeah. Like my first turn in a lot of games, I don't do anything. I just run the rhinos up. I sit them on objectives. I pop smoke and I just sit there. Okay, your turn. Quick, like 3 minute turns. And it's perfect. I don't have to put myself out of a bad position because I need to kill that, you know, squad of intercessor Marines that are 20 inches away. I don't have to do anything. I could just stand on these objectives. You got to come to me. And when you do, I'm going to punish you for it. And I like that style of list.
Nice. So is there anything that you think you'd change about the list? I mean, it performed pretty well over the weekend, but is there any anything you think you would want to make an edit to or an adjustment?
The only thing I would want in the list is more cultists and more rhinos. Just if some people have the tools that they can pick up a couple rhinos a turn, and they're just so good. I mean, if they alpha strike you off the table, you can just jump into another rhino and take off the board, you know. And cultists, again, OPSEC is so detrimental to winning these games. Just having some shitty T3 bodies that I can just run up and grab and steal an objective from my opponent, or, you know, just sit on something and now they have to chew through 10 wounds, which no one really wants to dedicate firepower to. It's just so good. A lot of people don't think about how good that is.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with you on that. Like, OBSEC is a phenomenal rule in 9th edition. Like, as we kind of talked about in our last episode about building a list for 9th edition missions, it's definitely something that you want to, you know, get into your list and have a lot of it, you know, so that you can play the mission.
Yep.
So let's go a little out of order here from our show notes, and let's jump into Ray. Ray, why don't you walk us through your list and kind of how you thought it would do?
Yeah, so I took Harlequins, Clowns, straight away from the better Eldar Craft Worlds. And I honestly just took it because this season doesn't matter and it seemed like a lot of fun. My buddy, Matt Barnertruck, the fattest man in Canada, he played and won some stuff with it. And I was like, dude, that shit looks pretty fun. So I took it out, did a little tweaks myself. Also pertains to the models that I actually had. And my goals for the event, shoot, were to win one game. Well, once we knew the pairings, was not lose against my army. That was pretty much the goal going into it. So I accomplished that. So that was good. But the list is a Frozen Stars clown list. Got a Shadow Seer as the Warlord. Just real quick, one thing I'll change is actually take a Warlord trait. That would be helpful. I forgot to write it down, so I just didn't have a fucking Warlord trait. It's something I'm still getting used to, that you have to have all your powers and all that shit down. Yeah. And then it's two troop masters. One troop master takes the Twilight Fang. That's one of the new relic swords that's in the White Dwarf. And then I have two big troop units. They're both the same. 5 Caresses and 5 Kisses. Then I strayed away from Barnstruck's list where he takes 4 units of Embrace. Or sorry, 3 units of Embrace troops units. Well, I took 3 units of Fusion Pistols. And then I took the transport to take those 3 Fusion Pistol clowns in, and then I had 1 unit of Embraces, and that's technically for the Sisters of Battle that I knew was going to be there because Phil was at least going to be there. I had a Death Jester with the Harvester of Torment. That's the no overwatch half movement pivotal role. The Solitaire, I took a Solitaire because I just figured that you need it. Barnchuk doesn't take it. I now know why he doesn't take it, but he took the Kagarot's Rose. And then I have 2 units of Skyweavers with the Zephyr Glaives and Haywire Cannons, of course. And like I said, 3 transports. And then the one pivotal role that I had on the Shadow Seer was the -6 range. And then I spend the CP before to keep its -1 damage of infantry because there's a 2 CP strat that allows it to affect everything in your army. And he also takes the relic that increases range of the auras. So it's all Wamba combo shit, and would have been better if I had a Warlord trait to increase as well.
No doubt, man. That's funny. So, you know, this list is, you know, Alan is kind of talks about his Harlequins quite often here on the podcast. But what, you know, when you're going into it, you know, this is obviously a mobile list. It's obviously a list that's going to be, you know, moving around the board. It has, you know, some potent melee threats. And some kind of hard-hitting characters as well. One thing you noted on is that you understand why Matt Barnerchuk does not take the Solitaire. Did you not like the Solitaire? What's going on there?
Well, first off, before the game even starts, because you know you're taking the Solitaire, he's only worthwhile in my opinion if he takes the Kagarok's Rose. And well, you're already taking your free relic on your Shadow Seer to increase your ranges, which is like super important so you're not like in these tight balls. And then the Troop Master with the Twilight Fang is just about the same thing, if not better, than the Solitaire, like all the time, and cheaper. So when you take a Solitaire, you're spending, you know, 3 CP to take 2 extra relics. So you're already down. And Harlequins, you want those CP to be doing all the tricks that they can do. And some games would have been way easier if I had the CP. And the second thing, the Solitaire sometimes is lackluster. Like the characters he needs to go in and kill with the AP weapon, AP 1 weapon, he can't get it done. So, I don't know. I could just use the points in other places where I can get another Shadow Seer instead of 2 troop masters. and have a bigger unit of an Embrace unit, I just think I can get more mileage out of that. Since, you know, everything, as we were saying earlier, is all about objective secured and troops and infantry to be able to do the secondaries as well.
Yeah, Alan, what do you think about that? Does it make any sense to you?
Makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I do take a solitaire, but I take it for several other reasons. Because I want the hero's path. Yeah, the hero's path stratagem where the Death Jester, the Shadow Seer, and the Solitaire get to redeploy. That's always good and very useful. And another thing is I take United. We Stand, We Fight as a secondary. And the Solitaire is one of my expensive units, and I don't have that ability basically to put it on three characters if I don't take the Solitaire. So, but I've had very bad success with the Solitaire as well. He runs up and you think he's great hitting on twos, wounding on whatever, you know, and he will whiff so often. You are so disappointed by what he can do. Here's a spoiler alert. I played Jeff and his orcs. I ran up to his pain boy and I totally whiffed against his pain boy and he crushed me with a power claw. And it's like, okay, that was fun. So I couldn't even kill a stupid pain boy. So I've been disappointed with him. I would, if it wasn't for United, while we stand, we fight, and that redeploy, I probably would drop my solitaire. And I've been thinking about it because I haven't had any success with him.
Well, the on that point of the redeploy, there is a 1CP strat now that's called Victorious, whatever, of the Webway. Well, basically, you just pick a Harlequin infantry unit, and then you can remove it. So Harlequin infantry, you just pick them up and move them. So you won't be able to, you don't have to have those three characters.
Do they come down the same turn, or is it like...
No, the next turn. They go into reserve and they come in next turn, yeah.
Next movement phase.
Virtuoso, by the way, is I think what it says. Ray, why don't you tell us about your game? The kind of game you want to highlight. Tell us who you played, what they were playing, and kind of, you know, a little detail about the game.
Well, there was two that I kind of want to talk about, but the one that I learned something. So the first game was against Dom, and that was honestly my first game with the list. So there was a lot of things I realized in that game. So practice before you go take it to a tournament. But the game that I really learned something was against Carlos and his Custodes. Everybody's telling me the Custodes are all good. It's a shit you hear on the internet all over the place. And I was like, okay, let's see these. And I didn't really get it. And then you play against them, and it's like, oh. This is it. Well, anyways, I took the Scramblers secondary, and that gets scored at the end of the turn. And, well, you got to know when your opponent can shoot when things die. And I did not know that, which has prevented me from scoring a secondary, and which kept having me try it. And then also there was, like, a Rhino. But it's just something that I learned and about, because I always thought, like, oh, you just do it and then you get the points, right? And then they just can't do anything for the rest of the turn. But yeah, just know when your opponent can interact with you on your turn when you're doing, you know, prepared scramblers or behind enemy lines, because that's pretty important, and to watch where those people doing those actions are.
Well, why don't you go over what was in Carlos's list and maybe give a little brief summary of how the game played, just for the listeners, you know, because I know Richard just talked about Carlos's list. So, you know, from memory, if you can, what did he have? And then, you know, how did your game go with him?
Yeah, so he won the roll-off, to the second roll-off, the important one to pick to go first or second. And he actually went second. So I was like, okay, I thought I lost already. But he took second, and I was like, all right, I'll just go and I'll just kill this big plane that he had. And when I put all the Haywire to shoot and to get him, and I only did seven wounds to it total between 10 bikes. And immediately was like, all right, this is not good. Change of plan. But in Carlos' list, he also had that tank. I don't know the name of it.
Caladius.
The Caladius tank. And then he had two Terminator units, and then he has Sisters. So when the flyer didn't go down or get severely wounded, which it would have been an easy kill the second turn, I was like, all right, I got to change plan. and go ahead and go for his rhinos and his girls, because those are easier kills. Those are how he spreads out. And I was hoping to contain them in the center, and then I can kind of skirt around the outsides. And, well, my turn, the second turn did kind of go my way, but then that's where I learned about the shooting, because I haywired the Caladius that I actually got a little above average, and I killed the Caladius. But he went ahead and shot in my turn and killed my scramblers, which then threw off my whole plan of moving up the board on my right, or his left flank, my right flank, because I had to keep doing scramblers over on that side of the field because I didn't have infantry. The infantry was hiding on the other side. Harlequins are good, but they get nutrition. Like, you're going to lose people, especially if you're not really good at rolling four up invuls. And the dice weren't with me really that game. I had another haywire shot. Like, the plane just survived because every time I shot it, and it was like haywire didn't work. So, yeah, that was my plan. And then it didn't work because he went in the center. And then I forgot about Trajan's stupid heroic intervention bubble within 12 inches. And he was able to heroically intervene, which got him extra movement to get on my objectives. And then a disappointing part of that game was a solitaire went to go kill Trajan. And, of course, you know, I got a decent amount of wounds on him. I think it was, like, only 6 or whatever, which is still good. But 3-up invuls are 3-up invuls. He fails 1, CP rerolls it, makes it, and then he kills me. Now, I had CP, and Trajan was only on 2 wounds left. When he died, when the solitaire dies, you can do Eye of Damnation. It's 1 CP. I had 2. And you just do D3 mortal wounds. Now, if I would have understood my army and knew my strats a little bit better, I could have done that. Odds are I kill him with 2 mortal wounds. And then the following turn, he doesn't do the heroic intervention. My solitaire is dead, but I had a unit that could... you have the which we just talked about. The virtuous of the webway thing where unit could have jumped in his backfield. I could have got my last scramblers because I finally did get the middle scramblers. And no, I didn't because a stupid rhino freaking blew up and killed my scrambler guy.
Oh, Jesus. That's absurd. So, yeah. Ray, is one thing, you know, Alan and I have been talking about is how, you know, with Harlequins, you it's hard to have units not contributing. Like, you know, having 5 troops in the back holding an objective is one thing, but having them, like, perform scramblers is something that you're like, you know, that means they're not killing or, like, contributing to the battle. And, you know, because Harlequins are kind of such an elite army, it's like, did you feel like that was probably, like, a secondary you wouldn't take again? Or did you like taking deploy scramblers with your Harlequins?
No, so the 2 secondaries that I always go, in the battlefield supremacy, there's the line breaker and then the engage on all fronts. I usually pick one of those, and that's always depend on if I'm going to be, you know, rushing my opponent. And if not, if I'm going to be trying to play the outsides, then I do all fronts. And then on the deploy scramblers, I actually like, because I don't play the Harlequins where, like, I have to always got to be killing. I have no problem hiding. I use the bikes as my front and bait, and then my troops units are in the back, and they jump out and then counter assault. Because... you know, 10 mans can kill pretty much anything, especially if you have the CP to give them the buffs, and they're by a troop master. But yeah, I deploy scrambler is not an issue because I don't. In this edition, you don't have to kill things; you just set yourself up to countercharge. You have to make it as I am learning as I playing the clowns is that you want your opponent to actually come to you, and then you punish them for it. Like, okay, go ahead, stay over there. And shoot at me, because, I mean, I have invuls, I have minuses to hit, I have minuses to range, I got better invuls if I have, you know, CP to do 3-up invuls. Like, survivability is actually surprisingly, like, clowns are surprisingly durable. And then you just do all this stuff while your opponent's staying away from you, and then when they come close to prevent you from doing it, then you go kill them. You just can't get shot in your own turn.
Yeah, that's usually a hard thing to accomplish, getting shot in your own turn. But I guess, you know, when you're killing a custodian's tank, they could, you know, shoot on death. So
yeah, that's one thing I'll say about the Harlequins that kind of surprised me was they're kind of more durable than I thought they were. I thought, you know, I'm always have, you know, several units left at the end of the game where I thought I'd be struggling not to be tabled. And because the prices went down in the last chapter approved, and then the new 9th edition chapter approved, their prices really didn't go up, as far as the troops go. Their prices really didn't go up. So you get a lot more troops, a lot more bang for your bucks. And the Psychic Awakening gives you all these auras and things that help you keep alive too. Like, you know, the Shadow Seer minus one to wound auras now can be applied to everything. And then the minus 6-inch range auras too. So the Harlequin, and then they basically have a lot more CPs to spend on defensive strats, because they've had a lot of defensive strats, but they just had no CPs to use them with. So they've gotten a lot better and a lot more durable.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. Ray, would you, obviously you're thinking about dropping the Solitaire, any other big changes to the list, or do you think it's a pretty good core?
Yeah, but I mean, on the same thing that Alan said about the Hero's Path, that's the one thing that kind of makes me want, and the secondary as we still we fight. But the thing is, I didn't have a second Shadow Seer, so that's the one thing that I'm for sure doing. And then I'm like, I'm about 60-40 on taking the Solitaire out and just getting bigger troop units. And yeah, that those are the only really two changes. The rest of the army is great. And then also all the fusion I don't need. I was just going to leave two fusion boats and then do another embrace unit and then drop the third transport. So then there's all my points I can play with. Because like I said, there's the one CB strat where you could just leave and come back. The next turn is deep striking. It's great. Because anytime, and it's one thing when you play somebody, you have to let them know, like, yeah, I got one CB where I could just leave and come back. And it's not even like you can be, like, you're going to use it. You tell somebody you can deep strike in their backfield, they play different.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of stratagems like that. Like, you know, where you just mess with people. Like the orc Burnabama is like, you know, oh, I can drive this over to you and auto detonate and kill myself and, you know, hand out three mortal wounds, everything within 6 inches of me. So you better play differently. And then you leave your opponent, you get them out of their comfort zone and get them making mistakes. So, well, right on, Ray. So I'll go next, and then we don't have two Harlequins back to back, and then we'll go to Alan. So I brought the orcs. I was, as Richard mentioned earlier, we've been kind of working on this same list together for, you know, a couple of weeks now, months now. And I was like, I'm going to bring it. I'm really excited to play it. And then, like, the day before, I was like, no way, man. I'm going to bring the orcs. I'm like the orc guy. I don't know. So I busted out 120 orc boys. And I had a unit of tank busters, a full unit of tank busters, three weird boys, a war boss, and a custom force field mech and a pain boy, and then like some commandos and a dev copter. And it's just a horde list, you know, it's like nothing too special. It's just like, it's 120 dudes with green tide. So hopefully you can kill it in time. And if you can't, then I'm going to win, you know? So, you know, it actually plays the mission really well. You know, I could do While We Stand, We Fight on my war boss, my custom force field mech, and one of my weird boys. For 15 points, if I don't think my opponent's going to chew through all my boys. I also have, I engage in all fronts or line breaker or domination, depending on the mission and who I'm playing. And then I take deploy scrambler. So like, it's nice because the list is designed, like I don't have to kill anything in my opponent's armies for my secondaries. I know what my secondaries are going to be. Although in two of my three games, I didn't take While We Stand, We Fight because I was afraid my characters were going to die, because I kind of realized playing this list and I 120 boys isn't enough, which is crazy. But I just noticed, like, I played, I'll talk about this game. So my first game was against Blood Angels, and it was a double sanguinary bomb list with like two units of outriders, a big unit of intercessors, and two incursor units, and then like a bunch of characters, like two banners, sanguinary ancients and banners, like a librarian dreadnought, a Calidus assassin. They had like Astaroth and the Sanguinor. So they had all these buffing characters. And, you know, I won the world to go first, and I actually performed my game plan was to just pin him in his zone and like kind of zone out his his Sanguinary Guard. So, you know, I deep struck 9 inches away from them, and I didn't do anything. I was like, all right, I'm not gonna charge you because I don't really want to fight you. But I positioned my orcs in such a way where he couldn't move over me. He had to land 1 inch in front of me and then charge those orcs. He killed those 30 orcs. The next turn, I fed him more, and I fed him more. And I think on turn two, he killed like 60 orcs or 70 orcs or some shit. It was nuts. And, you know, I think my problem was is I charged in on my turn two and, like, gave him more free swings. And what I should not have done, I should not have done that. I should have just, like, moved up, you know, and kind of prevented him from moving forward by using my bodies to kind of zone him out, if you will, so he couldn't jump over me in his movement phase. But I was finding, I found in that game, you know, it came down to the wire. And, you know, we ran out of time at the end of the game. And I'll talk about this, I think, actually at the end after I talk about the game. But we ran out of time, and I won by, like, you know, 7 points or something like that. But if he had gotten his final turn, he would have won. And I found that, like, look, my opponents, like, this happened in my third game, and I played Carlos as well. He was able to kill all my orcs by turn, like, four. Like, I had, like, no more orc boys left. So I was finding, like, either one of two things is happening. I'm either, like, being too aggressive with my orc boys, and I'm giving people like free attacks on them by charging them and fighting. But I don't feel like I was, but I definitely was like trying to deny my opponent objectives, primary objectives. And I think I might've been doing that a little too aggressively. But I also think like, I just need another unit of boys, like, because it's not going to be uncommon for people to chew through that many boys. Like the only one who wasn't able to do it was Alan, and he chewed through like 100 of them, you know, so it wasn't even like, you know, he almost got through all of them, but it took him 5 turns to do it. And unlike the Space Marine and Custodes players who were just able to chew through like, you know, 60 boys in a turn. And this is one of the big fears I had bringing this orc list was playing Richard Kozard, because his Noise Marines would just like eat, you know, 60 orcs in one turn and then the other half the next turn, you know, so.
It's because Noise Marines are bullshit.
Wow. Oh, come on, they haven't fucking changed. It's been like this since 8th, and they weren't bad either.
And I've been saying they're bullshit ever since I fucking played against them once.
When was that?
A long time ago, like when 8th started.
Crying for like 3 years, huh?
Yeah, that's what I do. I cry all the time.
It's okay. We have some tissue over here, right? You'll be fine. So yeah, like one of the things I learned with this orc list was like, you know, I got to kind of like know my game plan, and my game plan is like to kind of hold my opponent in and like keep them, corral them in. I executed that well in the first game, and the second and my third game against Carlos, I didn't execute it well. I was very aggressive with my orcs, and I made some charges I didn't need to do, and I lost too many boys too quickly. But one thing that happened my first game against the Blood Angels players, you know, we were using a clock. He had run out of time, and I had just like entered my fifth turn. I just finished my psychic phase, and I was like debating on doing some shooting and whatnot. And then time got called for the round, and I'm like, okay, that's it. You know, time's over. And my opponent was, you know, saying like, hey, I should be able to score my bottom of five, and, you know, win the game. And I was like, no, I'm not going to let you do that. And it was a little contentious, but I think, you know, just one of those things that, you know, it was definitely like, I felt like an ass because I was like, no, I'm not gonna let you like just win, even though like, you know, the round is over and you're out of time on your clock. So like, you know, whatever. I don't know. To me, it's like to the listeners, you just have to kind of stand up for yourself and like, you know, if your opponent is pushing you to do something you don't want to do and you don't think it's right, just, you know, stand up for yourself and just, you know, be insistent. You know, don't be a jerk. You know, you don't yell at them or anything like that, obviously. But just kind of just say, hey, no, thank you. That's not how the rules work. You know, and if you know, call a judge if you need to, and don't be afraid to do that. So just, you know, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, you don't always have to do what your opponents want. And sometimes, you know, you have to be a little assertive, and and you might feel like a jackass for doing it, but you know, it's a game, and two people are trying to win, so you know, only one of you can win. So you're gonna have to, you know, don't cheat or anything like that, and don't be an asshat. Like, you know, because my opponent and I, we were the Blood Angel player. We were having a great game. Like, we were, you know, there was no problem with like, oh, you forgot to do this, no problem. You go ahead and do that. It was a very chill game, but like at the end, it came down to like this one thing where it was like, you know, he wins if I let him do this thing, and he loses if I don't. And I was just like, well, I'm not going to let you because, you know, we're out of time and the round has been called. So we're going
to. Well, I do because you guys called me over to fucking do a judge call, which I fucking told you all there's no judges here because we're all supposed to be friends or acquaintances. And I think it comes down to whoever lost didn't have a chance at $300. So.
That's
why I walked away. I was like, yeah, you guys deal with it.
Yeah, well, you did walk away. Then we sorted out between the two of us. But yeah, it was like, you know, we were playing for money at the RTT. You know, there was a buy-in, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, so there was definitely a thing. But I was just happy to play 40K. You know, like, I was like, hey, I just want to play 40K. I'm not trying to win this. And just, you know, but at the same time, like, you know, if I'm going to a tournament, I'm, you know, that's like something I want to try and practice and get better at. And you know, at the end of the day, it's like you kind of have to put your foot down if someone wants to do something that's, you know, outside the scope of the rules. So
I was happy to take your guys' money.
Hell yeah, Richard. There you go. All right, so what, Alan, tell us about your Harlequin list. What'd you bring?
I took Soaring Spite, which is a little bit different from Ray's list, because that's kind of the moving shoot list rather than the assault list. My list was two Shadow Seers. I added a Shadow Seer. I took off a True Master because I've been taking While We Stand, We Fight, and I realized I've been playing it wrong, and one of my True Masters is so low points that actually the Transport, a Skyweaver, is more expensive than True Master. So to take While We Stand, We Fight, I needed to take two Shadow Seers and the Solitaire. So what this allowed me there's a few extra points, but what it allowed me to do is take one with the -6 inch aura, and it took the other one with the -2 wound, and it also gave me extra psychic powers and a few other things. So it's kind of, you know, some pluses and minuses to it. And actually, I didn't mind it too bad. I took a True Master and I threw the kitchen sink on him. He was the Warlord, so he had the Warlord trait of a Skystrider. Now, with the Soaring Spite, their Warlord trait is you can get out, you can disembark after a transport move. So you can move 22 inches with a Skyweaver, jump out, hack down a unit, and with the Soaring Spite stratagem, you can jump back in. You can move, consolidate 6 inches back towards your transport and jump back in. So you can just dust off a unit, and but without being attacked back, you can just get out of dodge. So which is kind of nice. He had what else did he have? He had my warlord, my relic. I gave him. I kind of want to give him Twilight Fang just to get out and hack down a unit and get back in. But I gave him Domino Shroud because I loaded up my Troop Master with, like, everything, I wanted to keep him alive. Domino Shroud is if you're charged. Well, basically, at the end of any phase, you can move 12 inches. So, if you're ever charged by something, you can just basically teleport 12 inches away so you won't be attacked. And I also gave him the Great Harlequin, which nobody ever takes. And the Great Harlequin is 2 CPs, so 2 of your precious CPs.
That's trash.
How dare you? You get the reroll. You get the reroll ones to hit only in assault. And the reason why I took this is I roll like crap. Now, I always roll. I rolled actually good to average in this tournament, but generally speaking, I roll really badly. So anything to mitigate my bad rolls, rerolling ones in assault, and also rerolling wounds from the True Master, I'm all for. But I actually kind of like I really like the rerolled ones, and I'll explain to you why during my game. And then basically I took 3 5-man squads with fusion and a few various assault weapons, 3 Skyweavers to transport them around in. I also took a bare 6-man unit. And I told last time when we talked about my army, I basically just wanted a unit just in the back, just naked, just standing around an objective. And I kind of was kicking myself for taking a 6-man unit, but actually I found out I didn't go far enough with that, and we'll talk about that in a second. And I also took 3 squads of 5 Skyweavers. Now, Skyweavers are really expensive, and everybody I see, like Ray took 2 units of 5, and a lot of people have only been taking, you know, a few of them just because they can spend their points elsewhere. But I'm the Skyweaver guy. I really like them. I love their mobility. I love their shooting because their shooting of the Harlequin army sucks balls. So they're the only unit that really can shoot in a Harlequin army. They can assault, they can just move, they just have a lot of tricks and a lot of utility. I just love the Skyweavers. And my secondaries, my go-to has always been Engage on All Fronts and While We Stand, We Fight. And then I'll pick one bad secondary at the last moment, and I'll explain that in a second. But I'm kind of – one thing I'll say is that I got no sleep at all before. And when I say no sleep, and I'm not talking like an hour or 2 hours. I'm like, I had zero sleep. I actually was composing a long email to everybody at 4:30 telling people I wouldn't be able to come. But because Ray invited me, and, you know, they kind of, depending on me, I didn't know if they had a ringer lined up or whatever like that. So I just
nutted it
up. And yeah, I know that now. But it's like, okay, well, you know, I won't be invited again if I bail out. So I was like, okay, I just nutted it up. And Jeff showed up at my house and was like, oh, God.
Well, that part is definitely true. We would not have been invited again.
My goal was just to win one game, and I always have a goal at RTT, just any tournament, just have a winning record, and I went 2-1, which I was kind of happy with. But I found out, we've been talking about secondaries for the last two episodes here, and I really need to, the conceptual is I'm not very good with. I need to actually be in the trenches and see why things work and why they don't work. For example, I took my game I'm going to go over in detail was with Jeff, and I took Engage on All Fronts because that's the one I just phone in and I just take. And when you have a horde army like orcs that are really good in combat and just swarm the board, Engage on All Fronts is not really a good secondary to take. I should have probably taken Linebreaker and probably dumped a couple units in his backfield, and that way he can't really go in every direction. Unless he greens tides, and then, you know, that would make me sad. But, and then I took, like, against the Sisters player, I took Mental Interrogation. I go, well, you know, I got two Shadow Seers. I got casting now. I can be in the middle of the board. But the Sisters, their characters are all in the rear, and I can't really get to them, except for Celestine. And I also took While We Stand, We Fight, so I can't lose my Shadow Seers. But if I go up to cast on Celestine moves 12 inches and then assaults me and hacks down my Shadow Seer. So even if I do get, you know, Mental Interrogation, I'm gonna lose a Shadow Seer. So I screwed up a lot in my objectives. And I was kind of married to While We Stand, We Fight, but I found out when I played Dom, grind them down, especially if you're playing an MSU army, because Harlequins are surprisingly durable. So grind them down, actually, I was doing really well with, and I kind of like that. I kind of like that objective because they're in the same category of no mercy, no respite. And also against Jeff, I should have taken Thin Their Ranks. And if I took Thin Their Ranks, I could have just killed like a million boys. And then I don't have to worry about protecting my Shadow Seers and my Solitaire. And I could have just Zulu'd them forward. And I could have been in the mix with everybody. And I could have been able to, you know, fight with them and be able to use them a little bit more effectively than I could when I had to hold them back. So the secondaries, I really need to start looking at the secondaries and pay more attention to it. Because I kind of biffed that one pretty bad. So I thought, like I said, I just wanted to win one game to show that I'm I'm worthy to be invited. But I went 2-1, so I was kind of happy with that. So let me talk about the one game I did lose, because I learned more from losing a game than I do by winning a game. I played this guy. He's a bit of a dick. He's getting in fights with all his opponents the whole day, and it's like, oh, great, I get this guy. Luckily, we don't have yellow cards, so he didn't get tagged out. But
who's that?
The orc player. What's his name?
Oh,
Jeff.
Fuck you, bro.
Hey, I wasn't the one who's fighting with all my opponents, but I'm a laid back, easy going guy. I can't fight with you anyways because you drove. So I'm kind of so I have to be nice to you. So in that vein, I made several mistakes.
He was nice enough to let me go first.
I wanted the dice roll to go first, and I told you I'm tired, and I thought, he's got nothing that can really hurt me. I was like, yeah, you go first. And then he's like, the jump. I played Jeff a million freaking times, and I completely forgot about it. So here comes these stupid-ass tank boys that come flying forward and took out one of my Skyweaver units. There's 250 points down the toilet. Not only that, this is what I realized. One of my weaknesses of my army is I need like a 10-man dude squad just to sit there, because I need a buffer. I need some chaff to protect me, because the Harlequins have a -6-inch range thing, which is kind of good for long range duels. But if somebody's deep striking down, it doesn't really help me that much, because he was able to get within 9 inches and then the 6-inch bubble, you know, because he's got a 24-inch range. I need just 10 guys just standing around naked, push them forward so that when he does deep strike, he just strikes 9 inches away from those guys, and the stuff he really wants to kill is back behind that, protected by the Shadow Seer's -6-inch aura. So that's one of the things I like to change about my list. But I'll let Jeff go first. He came up. He's just all in my face. He's got a million orc boys, and I'm like, Jeff rolls like a motherfucker when I play him. I swear to God.
Fuck like, you, man. My tank busters didn't kill as much as they should have.
Your stupid tank busters. You had six left. You had six left. Hitting on sixes. He shoots on my Skyweavers. He gets three hits hitting on sixes with six shots. And it's like, okay, it's like then, you know, the Skyweavers have blast. So I'm doing 30 hits to these stupid orc boys. I do I did 12 wounds to a giant squad. Four guys die. I'm like, mother effer. So it's like, he is one lucky dude. I'll say that for him. But so he took out a bike squad. He's just all in my face. And I'm like, what do I do now? It's like, I'm kind of stuck here. It's like I said, and then, so then it's like, okay, fine. I'm going to try to hit him on one side, try to do some damage. And then I have the ability to basically hit and run in the, my consolidate move. I get to fly 16 inches behind him. So it's like, okay, fine. I'll move up with Twilight Pathways. And it's like, I fail my Twilight Pathways even after a reroll. It's like, okay, I'm just stuck here. I can't really get any good, decent shots. So it's like, so I'm getting my stool pushed in by Jeff. And it's like, I said, fuck it. Let's do this. I threw my whole army in assault with his whole army. And I knew that was not going to end well, because the one thing about Harlequins is that stupid interrupt strategy just kicks them in the junk. Because if you're in assault with a giant squad of orcs, you can't fight everywhere at the same time. It the nuances of assault with Harlequins is just so tough. It's like, do you fight with the troop master first because he gets his five attacks, or do you fight with like the big squad first and then he'll remove a bunch of guys so like the troop master and a bunch of other guys won't be able to get assaults? And it's like this weird chess match where you kind of have to figure it all out, and it's like, ah, screw it. So,
well, Alan, it's always the troops first.
So
just saying.
Right now.
Well, that's what I did basically. So I attack him on one side, kill a bunch of orcs, and then on the other side he had another orc squad where two of my troop squads were engaged with him, and he just destroyed those two squads, of course. And then I just
orcs love killing things with T3 4-6.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, sure. You're not a custodes. Okay.
I mean, how many attacks do those squads have anyways? Like 60?
They're two attacks base, plus one for a weapon, and then if you have over 20 guys or 20 or more guys, you get plus one attacks. So you go up to four attacks each, and if you can buff them with a spell and shit like that too.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Whatever touches them just gets disintegrated. But on the other flank, though, I was basically, my Skyweavers and everybody else was in assault with two other squads, and I was able to kill basically those two other squads out, right? Because that True Master does work, because you don't like that everybody lasted that Great Harlequin, but that Great Harlequin and that re-rolled a wound, I was just, that was money as far as killing orcs go. So I wiped out two squads completely with no Green Tide. And then what happened was the stupid, we were playing, and he charged my True Master with a Pain Boy, and like I said, I was asleep. I never saw it, because if I saw it, I could use my Domino Shroud to get out, and I didn't see it. So he attacked me with his Pain Boy. Oh, crap. I didn't realize that. And his Pain Boy killed my Troop Master. And then the next turn, when my Solitaire went up to kill his Pain Boy, and my Solitaire, of course, just whiffed. And then I noticed, without being able to reroll those ones to hit, and without the reroll to wound, because I'm the only strength 4 in my whole army, pretty much, and he's toughness 4, I just lost so much ability to kill anything at that point. I really, as long as that true master's alive, I'm in the fight, and I might be able to beat him up. Not beat him off, don't mean that literally. But I might be able to fight him off. But when as soon as that true master died, that was it. That was the game right there, and I just couldn't keep track with him. I still had quite a few units left alive, and he had a couple units left alive. So you know, it wasn't. But he had such a positional dominance, and I took the wrong secondaries against him. And my valuable learning lesson is, if you win the die roll to go first, take it.
Yeah.
But I just kind of want to have a 10-man squad just to act as a screen, because I have no screening units really to push things back. And Ray actually has me tempted to take Dreaming Shadow mask. Now, the Dreaming Shadow is not one that's really talked about or used much, but they have a couple things. It's basically the shooting mask. They have their stratagem is, if you roll to hit, if you roll a 2, you get one additional, 2 to 5, you get one additional shot, and a 6, you get three additional shots. So it does really well with the combination with the Death Jesters. And the relic is Curtain Fall, which is the really good Death Jester weapon. So you have two, you can have two good Death Jester weapons, actually, that will do kind of work. And then the other thing is, when you kill a Dreaming Shadow squad, it gets to shoot back at a 4+, just like the old Space Marine banner. So, I don't know. If you kill the units, like Skyweaver and stuff like that, they get to shoot back. So that might not be necessarily a bad thing. And also, they have one additional benefit of, if they don't really suffer morale. They're kind of fearless, which is kind of nice. So I might try Dreaming Shadow again and see if I can get them to work. Or I kind of want to try Frozen Stars, because that... But actually, everybody else is taking Frozen Stars, because that's the one's really good and everybody knows it's good. So I might want to stay away from it, because I'm a hipster. So
he's our boomer hipster.
Yeah.
Okay. Who knows? Yeah, but so, what I got out of that is that Alan wants 10 dudes naked standing around, Jeff in his face, and
beating off.
Beat him off.
Yeah. Yes.
Good submission.
Perks of the podcast, my friend. So let's, you know, we're kind of running long. So let's kind of wrap this up with kind of a quick rundown of, you know, what are your thoughts of, you know, 9th edition for Ray and Richard? Where you see it, you know, what your kind of perception is of it right now that you've played these games, now that you've played in a pseudo event, you know, what are your thoughts on 9th? And we'll start with Ray.
I like 9th edition a lot. I think the better players is going to win the matches, as, you know, the Space Marines are good, but you give somebody that knows how to understand the missions and knows how to maneuver and when to attack and when to sit back, the person's just going to win. It's not like 8th edition where, like, you know, I could just blow you off the table. The secondaries are very important, very, like, there's really nothing for killing. The secondaries aren't going to let you win the game. It's all about holding objectives and accomplishing that primary, or at least denying your opponent doing their primary. That's another way of tackling it. But I really like 9th, and like I said, the better player will win.
Nice. Any thoughts on, you know, the GT missions, or, like, you think anything could be improved on, or are you just kind of still getting a feel for them?
No, the missions, I'm still getting a feel for them. I probably only play like half of them. So.
Word. What about yourself, Richard? What do you think? I know you played a lot more games than Ray has. You've been kind of swinging your dick around.
Seeing what I can knock over with it. It's fun.
Not much. But,
you know, a couple RTTs here and there. But, I really like 9th. It's a lot of fun. I don't see any glaring issues with it. Like Ray was saying, it's definitely more strategical, and the better player will win. You have to implement some good tactics and really know what you're trying to accomplish when you walk up to that table, and be able to be quick on your feet and react to your opponent. that's really, really big, and I like that. I think that suits me pretty well. The thing that I'm worried about, though, for the future of this, of 9th edition specifically, is when armies start getting like army specific secondaries. That can either go broken, you know, really, really fast. So that's something I am concerned about for the future of the game, but we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I have great trepidation about that as well. Like, it's, I mean, like, you know, GW is trying, but they're, you know, they're, it's like trying to watch, you know, like a big fat guy jump a fence, you know. It's kind of like, it's, you know, he's going to fall. You're going to laugh. You're going to laugh when he does it. But, you know, because it's like, look, GW, they're going to give, like, because when you start giving secondaries to some armies that not, where there's secondaries that some armies have access to that others don't, you're immediately creating this void. And even if you're like, well, we're going to give Necrons a good secondary because they suck. Well, I guess, but then, you know, what if they don't suck in the future? What if, like, someone figures out some broken build that it starts doing really well, and then they have this secondary, and it just compounds the problem? So, like, to me, it's, I'm not looking forward to that. That's the one thing I'm not, like, happy about that's coming down the pipes, is that mission or army-specific secondaries, because I think that's just, that just create, will create even more balance issues.
Well, it's like when 8th first started, I mean, the first few codexes were the first ones that actually had real stratagems, not just the three that you started the game with. And everyone was fucking pissing and moaning about how powerful it was. And people waited, you know, a year to get some of those codexes, actually probably more than a year. I'd say probably closer to two. So I'm really hoping it doesn't become that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It would be cool if they all came out in this, in like a chapter approved instead of with the codexes, so that they were all balanced at the same time. They had the same rule writer designing them, all of them, and they came out all simultaneously in one at one instance in time, so that there's not a you know, 2-year gap between Gene Stealer Cult and Space Marine getting their secondary mission. So
yep.
So yeah, I mean, I think Alan and I have kind of, you know, said our piece on 9th edition. I don't think this RTT is definitely like, look, I was really jazzed up to play my Chaos, but then I was like, I'll bring the orcs. And now I'm just like, man, okay, maybe I'll keep playing my orcs. I don't know, man. It's, I thought I was going to run into issues with my time, with the clock, but on every game I had 15 minutes left, 10 minutes left at the end of the game, and, you know, my first opponent clocked out, you know, which is, I always find it funny when the orc player, you know, is not the one who clocks out. It's like, I have 200 models, dude. Like, what's going on?
But we're only 2.5 hours, by the way.
Yeah, well, still, but I mean, yeah. So I was afraid my clock was gonna run out of clock, but it was not the issue. But I like 9th edition a lot. I think some of the secondaries are a little wonky. Like, there's some that are really good and some that are just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, who would take this and why? You know, like, I don't know. I've never seen some of these secondaries taken, and I don't think you'll ever see them in a serious game. Like, there's one where you have to, like, do an action in the middle of the board, but if, like, your opponent's within 6 inches of the middle of the board, you can't even start the action or some shit. It's just like, what?
Yeah, like, it's like the Warlord. Like you mentioned, everybody can go into reserve now. It's like, okay, fine. You'll never see my Warlord until turn 3 or 4.
Yeah, so if someone takes away the Warlord, you're like, yeah, I'll reserve my Warlord. Good luck. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
They're definitely on the right track, right? These secondary missions are... obviously they pull from the big tournaments that have already been established, but, like, they're on the right track. And yes, there's some that is, like, as you said, the center one, and there's one that's exactly the same thing. It's just, you, I might as well just take that one because you can't deny it, right? Yeah. So I think these chapters approves, like, it's promising. And
yeah,
I like that.
I do like the philosophy of the secondaries, because I like the philosophy that's, like, you probably won't get 15 points out of them. I like that it's, like, if you get 10 out of secondary, that's totally good. Like 9 or 10 points, 12 points, that's like totally respectable number for a secondary. And I like that. I like that they're hard to achieve, but I just wish there was like some of them were more internally balanced. Like they were like, you know, right now it seems like there's a few that get picked a lot by everyone because they're kind of like easier to achieve. And there's some that are way harder to achieve, so no one chooses those. So I'd like to either A, see the easy ones become harder, or B, see the harder ones become easier. So,
like right now, we're seeing everybody take deploy scramblers because you just take some random unit, just pops up in the backfield, deploy scramblers, and it's like, okay, bam, 10 points.
Yeah, until you get shot in your own fucking turn.
Now,
and a rhino blows up.
My only thing I'm worried about with 9th edition, and it's still a little bit early, so I'm not too concerned about it yet, but it's just going second, and we're seeing a little bit of an issue with going second. Now, we don't know if it's terrain right now, and the terrain is going to be eventually compensate for some of it. I don't know if it's because of the way we're building our army list right now that go or the way we're deploying that going second kind of is hurting us, or even with some of these secondaries we're taking, you're kind of more at a disadvantage than if you would have taken some other secondaries. So I still want to see how it plays out, but it's a bit of a concern of the of the going first is at an advantage so far, it would seem.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. On our stream table that we had, we had 4 games streamed, and the first two, the person going second won the game.
I don't think that's true with the first game.
Huh?
I was on stream for the first game. I went first, and I won.
Oh, well, then the streamers told me wrong, then.
I'm like, how does he? I don't even know, but I guess if he was there, that's a good way. Well, Ray and Richard, it's good that you guys still have a podcast, I guess, so we could steal you from it. But I don't know, are you guys, what's going on? I know we had, Richard didn't know last time we were on the show. So what's going on with VGR? Is Andy going to crawl out of a cave or what?
Well, Andy apparently works real hard in his job, and he detaches from the internet, I guess, is what he explained. Is just real crazy, I guess, during the COVID. And he's the one that does all the editing and basically everything for the podcast. Pretty Dick and I just kind of talk shit. So, it's on him. If y'all want to be mad, you can just be mad at him. That's cool.
Oh, that's all right.
What are you doing here now?
So that's fine with me. I don't care.
Well, we're happy to have you guys on. So, thanks for gracing us with your shit-talking presence. And,
Well, it's been very light, okay? I didn't know what I could say, not say.
you got to be careful.
Walking on eggshells over here.
Oh, yeah,
I just edited out all the swear words, but Jeff has a potty mouth. I was like, I just give up.
I do. I was on stream at your event, and I was like, fuck, shit, fuck. Oh, damn. Fuck.
Richard talked about a Custodes flyer, but I don't think he ever mentioned the name of it. Just save the name of it, by the way, for everybody at home playing along.
I think it's an Alaris.
No, it's an Ares. So everyone was so Carlos had an Ares dropship, which apparently can also fucking drop bombs. 20 dice on a 4-up, it does a mortal wound. My orcs are like, what the fuck? This giant ass plane is dropping bombs. I mean, it has like a super laser. Yeah, it's like, what the fuck.
Yeah, the thing is, it's like a flying Imperial Knight, basically. He's got like 24 hit points and all this other stuff, so it's like,
cool.
Yeah, it's fucking good, And it's
about Richard beat it with his janky Forge World, but that's another story.
I have two fucking models of my whole army that's Forge World, Jesus.
But are they Forge World?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah, Ray, I bought them officially from the United Kingdom, yeah.
But are they?
Yeah, sure.
And on that note, I think we're going to call it a night. Thanks for coming along, guys. All right, say goodnight, Jeff, and take us out.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening in. And thanks to Ray and Richard again for for coming on the podcast and talking about the Invitational. And if you guys have any comments or questions that you want to ask us, you can email us at focusedfirepodcast@gmail.com. And take it easy, guys.
Get good.
Later.
Get good, nerds.